Coming up next on Tech News Today, Microsoft changes gears from mobile to intelligent cloud. The Nucleus Anywhere has a bone to pick with Amazon's new Echo Show. Sleep tracking startup Bedit is acquired by Apple, and Mark Zuckerberg is totally not at all interested in running for president. No, really. All that and more coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1765, recorded Wednesday, May 10th, 2017.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Grasshopper. Stay connected and run your business from your mobile phone with Grasshopper. To save $50 on your order, visit trygrasshopper.com/twit.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome to Tech News Today. This is a show where we tell you what you need to know about technology, and we tell you why you need to know it. I'm Megan Maroney.
I'm Jason Howell. Do you have Amazon show regret at this point? A day later.
Buyer's remorse?
Yeah, buyer's remorse.
I only regret that I didn't buy two.
Oh, interesting. Well, that would qualify as regret. Mm-hmm. Yeah, buyer's remorse.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Good to know.
I want this one that we're going to talk about in the next story, too, because you can get it right now. So
that's true.
I want all the cameras in my house.
Compare them. Yeah. Last year, a company called Nucleus received $5.6 million in funding from Amazon's Escala investment arm. That helped Nucleus bring its product called Nucleus Anywhere, which is the first touchscreen intercom with a camera for audio and video calls that's powered by Escala, to market. For around $200, I think it's on Amazon right now for $200. It says MSRP is $250. The CEO of Nucleus, Jonathan Frankel, now says that Amazon's action of competing with its own Alexa Fund portfolio, with its announcement of the Amazon show yesterday, is a wake-up call for other Amazon partners, basically saying that the extent that Amazon mirrored the design and capabilities of the Nucleus Anywhere is, in his words, pretty astonishing. And yeah, he also points out that if Amazon's willing to go into this category, into this direction, having invested in his company and his product prior, it just shows how valuable they think this feature set and this product will be.
It's kind of lame, Amazon. Sort of lame to do that, I think. But all's fair in, you know, love and cameras investing that you put in your house. So it's available now. Uh-huh. There is a Mother's Day special. So two for $400. That's one for $200 if you want to talk to no one. It might have other features, like the Nucleus might let you buy things at Target or Walmart or other places besides Amazon, which could be useful. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. Amazon spokesperson Don Brune said they did not get the idea for the show from Nucleus. Mm. I mean, it's not like it's that much of an original idea. Like,
no.
I thought of it.
Hey, they should put a screen on this thing, maybe.
Right. Yeah.
That's kind of where I landed on that, too, which is just like it seems like the natural evolution for an in-home, you know, voice assistant. Once you talk to it enough times, you can kind of see where a screen on it would actually be useful in some cases, especially in the kitchen with recipes or whatever. That's just one example. But then, of course, this whole video conferencing feature is another big part of it. I wonder if the Nucleus Anywhere also uses the same communication platform as the Amazon show, like the video conferencing.
They do use Skella services.
So they use Skella services, but is it the same communication? So because the Nucleus or the Nucleus,
it was
a year ago.
Yeah,
right.
August. Yeah. So they couldn't have used August going at that point.
So I wonder if it'll have that and if that's actually a benefit to have access to that as opposed to using Nucleus Anywhere's proprietary chat or video conferencing service or whatever.
Right.
In which case, this could be a nice kind of like value added alternative, let's say.
Right. Well, you know, All kidding aside about the device and whether you should get one or not, if Amazon really did decide that instead of trying to buy the company, they decided it was more financially feasible to invest in the company and steal their idea, that I mean, that's something to investigate. Like, if that's what companies are going to do, you know, they're going to look and say, oh, yes, I want to invest in all this small company. You know, because we get frustrated when, like, Acompli, like the email program that we all love, got bought by Microsoft. But they bought them. You know, they mm-hmm. bought them. They turned it into something else, as opposed to just investing a smaller amount in the company. I think that does a lot to kill innovation.
Yeah. Well, and he even said, Frankel even said, it hurts when your closest partner, I mean, they were the biggest investor in the company, becomes your biggest competitor. And, I mean, yeah, that's got to be kind of awkward. It's like you're still operating based on that money that they gave you. And hey, here they come. I mean, Amazon, as far as competitors go, Amazon comes out with a competing product to your product that is relatively unknown. You're kind of, I mean, I don't want to say entirely dead in the water, but it's not looking too good for you.
Mm-hmm. No. Well, Microsoft Build 2017 started today with the announcement that 500 million devices are now running Windows 10. That's up from 400 million in September of last year. The company also revealed Azure Cosmos DB to help with globally distributed applications like you do. Dharma Shulkla, Microsoft engineer and architect of Azure Cosmos DB, says the 7-year project is designed not just for global reach, but for customer accountability. In his keynote, CEO Satya Nadella said the company is no longer focusing on mobile first. Their new mantra is intelligent cloud.
TM.
Yeah. In other Microsoft news, the company demoed what's next for Cortana, including more skills and the ability to tell you where she is helping you from. So if it's Cortana in the car or on your phone or on your computer, then Cortana will change her behavior accordingly based on where you are using her. And like the Harman Kardon speaker deal we talked about earlier this week, Microsoft also hopes to continue to make deals to add Cortana to third-party device manufacturers.
Yeah, they've got the Cortana skills kit. For public preview, they'd had this private beta going on, very select partners. Now they're opening it up to everyone. So basically that allows developers to build skills, or even, I thought this was interesting, convert those skills from some sort of a conversion process or the Microsoft bot framework. And yeah, it's just kind of interesting to me that along the way, just even in the year and a half that you and I have been doing this show, I feel like this was our conversation last year, but it had to do with like messaging bots mm-hmm. and everybody had to make their messaging bots. And then they had to consider, well, I've got to make my messaging bot for this proprietary platform. Then I've got to make my messaging bot for this proprietary platform. Here we are a year later. And now take that same conversation and apply it to voice assistants in the home. Mm-hmm. And that's where we are again. At least in this case, there's some sort of way to do an easy conversion from one to another. I don't know if that was the case with the bots, but I don't remember hearing much about that. So at least there's a little bit of portability here.
Yeah.
As that's concerned.
when you said like converting this to Cortana, it just has in my mind just like this sort of conversion process, like a cult. Like, come here, Echo. Yeah. Come on, let me tell you.
I think I meant more like a progress bar going, I know. Converted, but I think that's probably more appropriate.
Yes, I like that. Microsoft also did mention bots, but nobody cares. So we're not going to talk about it.
All right. Cool. Behind that.
Yeah, and the 500 million is good. 500 million, you want people to be using Windows 10, but they had said a billion by 2018. Of course, they backed up on that. So they revised it. But yeah, it's I think they're okay. The other thing that I liked from the keynote, which I thought was really interesting, was something called Emma's Watch. It's a wearable that temporarily short circuits tremors that people might have. And it allowed Emma Lawton, a graphic designer, to continue to work. She was up on stage with the designer who created Emma's Watch and talked about how it helped her work. So, like, you know, it's not something they're going to start mass marketing to everyone, but just kind of showing off what they can do.
The power of what they can do behind the scenes. Oh, that's cool. Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
So, yeah, for people with Parkinson's, all kinds of tremors. Oh,
that is fascinating.
Yeah. So temporarily, like, while you're working.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Very neat. I hadn't even heard about that one like that. Bedit is a Finland-based company that creates sleep tracking products, and they've apparently been acquired by Apple according to changes in Bedit's privacy policy that actually reveal that user information will be disclosed according to Apple's privacy policy. I think that makes sense. Bedit isn't expected to operate differently as a result of the acquisition, at least not in the short term, though longer-term integrations into Apple's own product lineup could eventually keep the company from operating independently somewhere down the line. But apparently Bedit was originally launched on Indiegogo in 2013. They now have the Bedit 3, I guess, is the current model. It's like a sensor strip that you put onto your mattress, one per person. So if it's, you know, two people sleeping in the bed, you would need one on each side. And it does all, you know, all sorts of sleep tracking, sleep time, efficiency, heart rate, movement, snoring, temperature, all the kind of things that if you're a data nerd, you want to track about your sleep.
Right, but you don't want to have to be wearing something to bed or be remembering, I'm going to sleep now, I'm going to set my device, I'm going to hold my iPhone right by my pillow or any of that. So, for data sleep nerds, we both confessed on the show that neither of us could care. we could care more about tracking our sleep.
Yes.
In other words, we do not care at all about tracking our sleep. We just are happy to have some when we get it.
Yes.
But I think there are a lot of people that this does that make them excited. So the Bedit actually came through our offices a while back. I remember I wanted to try it and Karsten took it home. He said, and he told me that Padre also tried it. And then I emailed Padre today and he didn't remember trying it. Either that or he just, he's very curt in his emails. He just said negative. So
negative.
Either he had a negative experience or he did not review it.
Could really go either way.
Yeah.
With Padre, it could really go either way.
Yes.
You just never know what you're going to get.
So it also works on ballistocardiography.
What is that?
That's how it works.
Oh, okay.
That's how it tracks your sleep with ballistocardiography. Sounds like ballistics.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I know.
If
that
it
sounds
is.
Dangerous.
Yeah.
Don't sleep on that. You don't want to die. $150 for the product. It's still on sale in Apple's store page. I don't know. I mean, does this get folded into their other technology at some point? Like, is this an Apple Watch move or something?
That sounds like an Apple Watch move because that's the one thing people complain about. Like, I can't track my sleep with my Apple Watch because it doesn't, you know, have to charge it at night. My life is so difficult. So this way you have it on your bed, you put your app, you charge your Apple Watch and you just lay down and it connects to your Apple Watch. And
okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Sleep tracking.
Snap released earnings for the first time today. Quarterly earnings. The makers of Snapchat went public last month, and today's earnings did not meet Wall Street's expectations. Despite their successful IPO, Snap says the company is now losing twice as much money as they did last year. They did, however, bring in $149.6 million in revenue from January through March. One would expect that most of that came from ads, although their CFO did say that spectacles, those smart glasses, is a million-dollar business, if you can believe that. Snap is an ad-supported network, of course, so advertisers were looking at the daily active users, or DAUs, from today's news. Last September, Snap told us they had 153 million DAUs compared to Instagram's 200 million. Today, they said they had 166 million daily active users. At the end of March, Snap's stock toppled as expected with news like this. Of course, Facebook and Twitter stock also plunged right after they reported earnings for the first time, so all hope is not lost. But I think it should be said that when Facebook and Twitter's stock plunged, they didn't have companies like Facebook and Twitter breathing down its digital necks, copying its features, and stealing its users.
Stock fell a lot, 25% in after hours training, like they're in the gym, trading. That's a quarter of their value. Boom, poof, right away. Especially this early on. But like you say, I guess these movements happen. The big challenge for Snapchat right now is just proving that it can go toe to toe with companies like Facebook and Google in the advertising world and continue to grow their user. Continue that user growth, which is really. It hasn't entirely stalled, but in the last few months with all the stuff that Instagram's doing, I have to imagine that's part of the problem is that, you know, Instagram just has an insane user base right out of the gate. It's something like 400 million users of Instagram or something compared to what Snap has. They have that installed base. They push out similar features. There's just little friction there. It's, mm-hmm. There's no reason for people to not use that over the other. And then suddenly Snap has an even tougher hill to climb.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Instagram has 200 million.
200 million.
Daily active users. That's a lot of Instagrammers. So, yeah, it's it they didn't have to say what their users were before they went public. Now they do. Mm-hmm. So it's like it's a direct number. They can't just say like, but we have a more valuable audience, which is that's what they're saying. Our audience is more valuable, which is shorthand for we're not growing anymore. So you're going to like these people because they're going to buy all your stuff. So good luck, you know, convincing advertisers of that. The CEO, Evan Spiegel, he hasn't given many interviews. So it was sort of a surprise that he was on the earnings call. He said in defense of the company, this is my favorite quote, people really enjoy looking like a puppy and things like that.
Mm. Precious.
Which is true. I do. I am a huge fan of the Snapchat filters, but I don't know if that's going to make it for them.
10 years from now, people are still going to be making themselves look like puppies.
Yeah, because I do not see, I see an ad when I flip through the filters. There's always, you know, a supported filter. I always sweep by that. I'm never going to, I don't, you know, it doesn't have, no matter how many, how beautiful that taco looks as my face, if it's a Taco Bell ad, I probably am not going to, you know, use that one. I'll use the other ones.
And there's no way to magic erase the Taco Bell logo out of there?
That's a good point. I still have not investigated that. I really should be get better at reporting and really investigate how you use the magic eraser.
I think magic erase should be at the top of any priority list.
it really should. But there's no telling. There's no actual statistical evidence that the features, the stories, and all the other features they copied are actually stealing their users, but it looks really bad.
Right. Yeah. Google tracks a lot of things, and now the Google app and website will help users track events and activities nearest to them. When a user searches an event-related query, Google will return results in a calendar-style list format, noting the source of that event and allowing the user to click right through and purchase tickets or find more information. Users who don't have a clue what they want but know they want something close can search for events near me to see what happens to be around them. I like this because I've found myself definitely in the past searching for tickets for something or whatever, and you end up with this like wall of Google search results. Most of them are resellers, and you know they're overpriced tickets, and really the thing you want to get to is like buried somewhere. It's just not the easiest way, and also like finding things that are around you. You know Google has this information. This is just another example of Google taking that information and organizing it as per their kind of their credo, you know, for years and years, to take information that exists and organize it into an easy to use way. And I just like the way it looks. I'm sure this will be super useful. I don't know if I necessarily go to Google thinking this is where I go to find events, but when I'm searching for events and I'm using Google, this is going to help me out in ways that in the past I've been really frustrated by.
Yeah, I used it today. As you know, I've been looking for Kendrick Lamar tickets. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, as you know, Jason,
oh, yes.
Now you also know this. And so I tried it out and it did show, you know, it shows like you just search Kendrick Lamar and it's like songs and, you know, website and then events. And I went to events and it really did cut all of the weirdo sites that are trying to sell you fake tickets and all that. And it took me to Bands in Town, which you've probably used that app because you go mm-hmm. see live music. And then, you know, I went through and it wasn't like I got a cheaper price. And, you know, when I finally made my way to Ticketmaster when I've been looking before, but it was really easy. It was just super, I didn't have to download another app. You know, it offers you the opportunity to download Bands in Town, but you don't have to. You can just go to the website, log in. I mean, I'm wondering if it also already has like all my, you know, credit card information with Google and stuff. I haven't gotten that far because I still can't pull the trigger and buy those tickets. But help me with that, Google. Help me with my indecision.
Google, surface some Kendrick Lamar tickets for like $50.
Yes.
Instead of $200.
Yes,
that's
please.
All we're asking for.
Please. Quick reminder, you can comment on anything we discuss by emailing tnt@twit.tv. If you've got some extra Kendrick Lamar tickets in Oakland August 4th, let me know. Because I can trust you. Just send me an email. That's the, you know, and yeah, I know. I'm told not to buy the tickets online. That's what, from a stranger. That's
probably a good idea.
But yeah, please email us and subscribe to the show. twit.tv/TNT. And after the break, is Mark Zuckerberg running for president, or does he just enjoy feeding strangers cows? David McCabe from Axios explains. But first, let's take a minute to thank Grasshopper, the sponsor of this episode. Grasshopper is a virtual phone system designed for entrepreneurs. Grasshopper works just like a traditional phone system, but requires no hardware purchase. They have an iOS app and an Android app, and callers can then reach you wherever you are on your mobile phone. Grasshopper allows you to keep your existing number so you can maintain your brand. When you make a call, your client will see your Grasshopper caller ID instead of your personal phone number. All you have to do is select a toll-free or a local number, record a custom greeting, then add multiple extensions for your business so you can everybody can use the number. Toll-free numbers are great for marketing and then make your business sound more professional. You can also set up department and employee extensions with custom call forwarding to any phone in the world. You can get voicemails emailed to you as audio attachments. You can also send and receive SMS text messages from your business number. A lot of businesses are through texts these days. It's a lot easier to get things done, I find. Join the over 250,000 Grasshopper customers today. Plans start at just $12 a month. You have a 30-day money-back guarantee. Turn your smartphone into a business line with Grasshopper. To save $50 on your order, go to trygrasshopper.com/twit. That's trygrasshopper.com/twit, and we thank Grasshopper for their support. Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg has challenged himself to learn Chinese, create his home, his own home Jarvis personal assistant, and more. But this year, he has resolved to visit every state in the U.S. And for the past 5 months, we've watched him awkwardly try to look like a real human person, interacting with other real human persons, which has caused many to come to the obvious conclusion that he is running for president. Joining us to talk about Zuck's real political strategy is David McCabe, who writes about technology for Axios. Welcome to the show, David.
Thank you for having me. I've got to be honest, I don't have any Kendrick Lamar tickets.
Seriously, we brought you on for one reason today. Thanks.
Okay, talk to you later.
It's been nice.
No, just kidding. Come back. Seriously.
So you write that the whole Zuck running for president is overhyped. But his friends tell us that he might still run for something. What do you think?
So I'm doubtful that he'll run for president in 2020. I think he's got a good gig. It's a pretty influential one. But I think that the broader point of this trip seems to be to set him up for some sort of large role in the public discourse about complicated and, yes, politically contentious issues.
So we say we've been following him, but it's really not – the press hasn't been able to cover this. What we're seeing is these pictures that they don't necessarily look awkward, but they definitely look posed. The one with the cow is one – or the truck. The cow is the one that I just love and can't get enough of. Or the dinner that he had. So what do you – yeah, there's that cow picture.
That picture took 20 minutes.
So what do you think he is doing on the one with the kitten? I don't think I saw that one.
don't get lulled into Zuckerberg's power of photos here.
There's no such thing as fake news. He's fake news. He's with a kitten. What do you think he is doing?
Well, so I will note the photos are an interesting thing to point out because they are actually being shot, sometimes at least by a former photographer to President Obama, reportedly. You know, I think that the question of what he's doing is sort of an open-ended one right now. But I think if you look at what he's interested in, there's a couple options. This obviously helps him set up his sort of philanthropy, the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative, so he can use this kind of listening tour there. It helps with Facebook's brand. Facebook has struggled a little bit with allegations of political bias and allegations of its role in the political process. And so this, I think, helps their brand too. And yes, it does conceivably set him up to serve in some sort of public capacity down the road. But we'll see exactly what that means.
Yeah, you mentioned some of his entourage. He's got quite an entourage that surrounds him when he's going on these travels, former government officials, advisors. In so many ways, what he's doing mirrors what politicians do when they travel the country to get down boots on the ground to talk to their constituents and really get to know the people in the areas that maybe they don't spend a lot of time in. How much of this do you think is truly about connecting with people? And how much of it is about the optics of what Zuckerberg is doing here and how that kind of gets translated in the press? I don't know if it's just me, but sometimes I feel like in some ways it's a manipulative thing that's happening in front of us.
So I obviously don't want to speak for his personal motivations.
Sure.
You know, it's hard to read into that. But the optics are very good in terms of the level of production, right? And you're exactly right. They use basically the tactics of a campaign or of a government official, the advance work is significant. I've talked to people who've been involved in these events. Nothing is left to chance. They scout the locations out. I do think that there may be a little bit of a difference that I've observed in how this has been received by the national press, who say, oh, it's a ploy, he's trying to run for something. And in the local press, which actually often is very excited about the fact that Mark Zuckerberg is taking the time to get to know people in their community. So I think at the highest level, it's a little bit hard to read what he's doing. But I wouldn't discount the power of someone as important as Mark Zuckerberg visiting a community he's never visited before.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, 1.9 billion people go to Facebook once a month. There's only 321 million people living in the United States. So does Facebook or Mark Zuckerberg have the responsibility to get out there and see what regular human persons like and do?
I don't want to speak again for what the responsibility of any Silicon Valley CEO is, but I certainly think that and you guys probably feel this more than I do, that Silicon Valley has clearly been jolted by this election, and I think a lot of people, including seemingly Mark, do feel obligated to get out there and maybe learn a little bit more. I mean, Sam Altman from Y Combinator met with a bunch of Trump voters as well, and I think it's very telling about kind of the feeling among some in tech that they really don't understand a large part of the country that maybe they thought they did.
Well, you're in D.C., and we have someone in the chat room who said Silicon Valley folk really don't understand how despised they are by the rest of the country. They are not considered admirable. I mean, I know that D.C. is its own bubble, a different bubble than Silicon Valley, but do you agree that is generally, from your view on the East Coast, is that generally the accepted rule that people in Silicon Valley are despised?
I don't want to say despised. I think there is maybe a skepticism of new technology that in Silicon Valley would be viewed simply as admirable innovation, right? I think that policymakers and regulators are prone to saying, well, wait a second, let's figure out what this means beyond your exciting, flashy demo video. And I think sometimes that's where you see the rubber hit the road.
Yeah. There was a dinner that Mark Zuckerberg had with an Ohio family, and there's a whole piece about it and photo opportunity, of course, because that's what his entourage does. Spokeswoman, I guess, afterwards instructed the family to, quote, hammer home to those who inquire about the whole presidential aspirations thing that is definitely not in the cards, that's definitely not what this is about. So there's an obvious attempt by the entourage, by the group, by this kind of coordinated effort to control the message, the reason behind it. Do you think that kind of control is necessary for something where he's casually going around the U.S. Meeting people?
Well, it's anything but casual, right? Yeah. I mean, all the things you're speaking to add a layer of complexity to it.
Yeah.
That I think, you can ask yourself whether or not he would. Want to just drop in randomly on a place. But I think one question I have is, whether or not someone like Mark Zuckerberg really can just drop in on a local business, right? It may be more complicated for him to go to a place like that. So that'd be my sort of one question. But certainly, they have made a choice to produce this. And whether that choice plays out well or could have played out better if they went another route, I think we'll know at the end of the year.
Yeah.
But some of the things that he's doing are not, they're not taking pictures. You wrote that he also spoke to people whose lives had been affected by the opioid epidemic. And, that there was no photo op there, which, I mean, I think maybe we're not giving him enough credit. I've heard people talk about, for these companies, it is definitely the bottom line. But someone like Mark Zuckerberg doesn't have to work another day in his life. Like he could quit and be happy. So that there is this idea that like they're not just trying to do this for Facebook. Like they really believe in this stuff. He believes in helping the world. Like he believes when he gave a bunch of money a couple years ago to East Coast schools, like it kind of ended up in a mess, but his heart was in the right place. Like with his foundation, he's giving his money away. So, I mean, I guess in that sense, he has said he's going to give it away. But do you think that there's a lot of what he's doing that we're not seeing?
I think Facebook has, so that the opioid roundtable is a great example. They did post an image of that directly to Facebook, but it was their image. It was his copy, or his copy written in his voice. You know, I think there certainly is an attempt to do this in private. They say it's so that he can be more candid, and they and the you know the people he's talking to who are not media trained can be more candid. And it also, I think, links into this idea that he has always wanted to grow as a public speaker and grow as a you know, a public figure. And certainly I talked to political operatives who said, yeah, the way you get better at doing an event like this is you do an event like this.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Zuckerberg had been criticized a lot early on, especially in just being kind of awkward in front of people when giving speeches or during keynotes or whatever. That's a skill that doesn't come very easily. You only get better at that by doing and doing and doing. This is a great way to do that, mm-hmm. for sure.
Yeah,
there are very few naturals in politics or in things like this, right? It's just, yeah. It's hard. I mean, I talked to a communications director for Jeb Bush, who I think we all saw actually get better on the campaign trail over the course of that election cycle. So even people who are politicians are not always naturals at this.
Well, you write about that in your piece on Axios. And so your beat is technology and politics, or you just cover the DC area of technology?
I cover technology, policy, and politics and how they collide together. So I've done that for a while. I cover the FCC, Congress, and then I cover, yeah, how these Silicon Valley's companies play politics here in Washington.
So a lot of you have a lot of pieces on net neutrality. I noticed there's a lot going on there. So another place to follow you?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at D McCabe. So that's DMCCABE.
Thank you so much for going on, David.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
And good luck with the tickets.
Thank you.
Take care, haven't I? Maybe she'll see you there at the concert.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I go to all my shows in Oakland.
Yeah. All right. Take care. Have a good night.
Thanks a lot. You too.
All right, feedback time. James Grogan writes about our, I got it right with one of those, I'm sure, writes about our robot discussion yesterday. He says, in Robert A. Heinlein's 1957 novel, The Door into Summer, in the future, you'll have a job only long enough to purchase a robot. Thereafter, the robot works, but you get the money and pay the taxes. If you want or need more money, you go to work again and purchase more robots as needed. And I didn't know this was a thing. I think I mentioned this very, very passively last week as like, why don't we just, you know, buy robots and then put them to work and they make money for us? Apparently this is a thing. I could totally see this in the future.
Yeah, it's a science fiction thing.
I know. Mm-hmm. But soon to be real.
Yeah, all science fiction.
Science real.
It's all come true. So yeah. That this is next, I guess.
I have to add that book to my list, The Door into Summer.
Mm. Cool. TNT's fan of the day is Doug Didon, who emailed us a series of pictures. Here's what Doug said. I listened to Tech News Today and many other netcasts from Twit while training for and competing in the 50K mashup, a series of 7 50-kilometer trail races throughout the Midwest. The first one in January was cold. It started out at 2 degrees Fahrenheit, and it never got above 9 degrees Fahrenheit. The one in March was wet and muddy. The one in April was hilly and hot. And while I finished the first two in the allotted time, I failed to complete the third one before the cutoff. You'll also notice that I wasn't wearing my MP3 player for the third race. I've learned my lesson.
Ah, okay.
I'll take TNT with me on the remaining races in the series.
We'll help you win. Mm-hmm. We got you.
Mm-hmm. I love to know what people are doing while they're listening or watching. Show us how you watch or listen. Record a video. We love to get videos. Take a picture of yourself or your setup. Post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook. And you can also just email it to us at tnt@twit.tv. If you're putting it on social media, use the hashtag HowIWatchTNT. And put that in the subject line if you email it. That way it'll be easy for us to find.
Easy for us to find. Behold the infinite power of chicken nuggets. Okay, maybe not infinite. In fact, not even 18 million, which A, is far less than infinite. You could agree. And B, is the actual amount of retweets that 16-year-old Carter Wilkerson was told by Wendy's he'd need in order to secure for himself a year's worth of free chicken nuggets. But the internet works in mysterious ways. After tweeting a plea in all caps saying, "Help me, please, a man needs his nugs," back in April, he hoped to break his own personal record of 12 retweets and instead to date has seen around 3.5 million of them, breaking the previous retweet record set by Ellen DeGeneres' star-studded selfie from the 2014 Oscars. And I mean, he's been all over the place. Bleak's calling him the Nugs guy. That's pretty much his name at this point. He's gone on the press circuit in pursuit of hot Nugs. Wendy's decided apparently to grant him a year worth of free Nugs, even though he didn't get the required 18 million retweets, but also donating $100,000 to a children's adoption foundation. As well.
Wendy's is doing that.
Wendy's is
not
doing that.
Carter, yeah. Wilkerson.
No. He's selling his Nugs on the side, and then, you know, no, he's not doing that. He's eating the Nugs.
Now you say that the internet works in very mysterious ways. I think the internet works in the most obvious ways possible. Like, tell someone to retweet something, use a weird, funny sounding word like Nugs. And
it's fun to say. At
the
say.
End, you get verified on Twitter. We're still not verified on Twitter.
I didn't know it was going to go in this direction. You're right. We're not verified on Twitter, and the Nugs guy is.
Yeah.
The Nugs guy also probably has a Wikipedia page at this point. He probably, because he's been on Ellen DeGeneres. Mm-hmm. Let's mm-hmm. see here. Nugs, Wikipedia, and then I'll throw in Carter for kicks. Let's see here. Jimmy Carter. No, that's different Carter. Mm-hmm. No, there is no Nugs guy on Wikipedia as far as I could tell.
Good.
Yet. You never know.
His Twitter bio says he also likes tacos and cherries. So, you know, we can, I don't know.
What's his next pursuit?
I'm thinking. Well, his girlfriend, I spent way too much time investigating this. His girlfriend said she would go, she asked how many retweets would it take for him to go to prom with her. And he said 18 million as well. But she did not get 18 million.
Yeah.
But he still went to prom with her.
Okay. Well, that was good of him mm-hmm. to, yeah.
Yeah, there she is.
It's a strange place to put yourself with that mm-hmm. query. Mm-hmm. I think this only works once. If you're Carter, you only do this once. This is your 15 Nugs of fame. 15 million Nugs of fame. And you don't go back to that well again. You now have a ton of new followers, 105,000 followers on Twitter as a result of this. Figure out something creative and crafty to do with all those followers.
Or good. Figure out something good, Carter Wilkerson.
Carter, figure out how to manipulate all of those followers.
No, he actually is selling t-shirts that he says the money is going to charity.
That's awesome. Way to go, Carter. Now let's get you a Wikipedia page. Mm-hmm. You deserve it.
I wonder how many retweets it would take to get him into college. Like, I don't
I don't know. That's a pretty good thing to have on like your college application.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
To be like, oh, and by the way, I hold the record for retweets because mm-hmm. of Nugs.
He held, yeah. I don't know. How long do you think it's going to take to break that record?
I don't know. Somebody's going to figure it out, though. They're going to come up with a more interesting demand. Mm-hmm. Although it's pretty hard to top chicken nuggets, really. TNT records live now, I guess. Yeah, probably not for you, Megan.
No, I don't like
I'm
chicken.
I'm pretty sure you don't like chicken nuggets at all. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. Leave us a short voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. Find us on Twitter at TechNewsTodayTV.
Share your thoughts on the stories that we discuss in the TNT subreddit at technewstoday.reddit.com and subscribe to the show. You want to be the first one to know who broke the retweet record with their Nugs tweet.
Oh, yeah, you do.
Yeah. Bleak says it's 1 to 2 years. The record gets broken every 1 to 2 years. That's the Bleak policy or the Bleak rule, that uh-huh. the retweet rule. So yep. We'll see. 1 to 2 years. That's a long time to wait. Twit.tv/TNT. Subscribe so you're the first one to know. And if you want to tweet at me, I'm at Megan Maroney.
I'm at Jason Howell. Make sure and add both of us on whatever campaign you do for retweets so that we're factored in on those millions of retweets. That would really help us out.
Do you ever retweet when a tweet says retweet?
No.
I never do either.
No. I watch passively. Uh-huh. I thought about it on this one because I was like, I understand. I understand the need for Nugs.
You thought about it.
But I didn't do it.
Oh, huh.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Anyways, Brian, did you?
Did I retweet?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
But I'm too busy making video effects. So maybe I'll put this on Twitter and tell people to retweet that.
I do like to look like puppies.
Very good, Brian.
Retweet this, everyone.
Yeah, retweet this like 5 times or something. Thanks to Brian, our technical director. Thanks to Burke, who I doubt retweeted the Nug guy on Twitter. Thanks to Kevin for editing. Did you retweet the Nug guy? He doesn't have Twitter, so that's a big no. Okay. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Bye, everyone.